Let me read out to you only two lines from Bertrand Russell. You know, Bertrand Russell is to my mind a philosopher highly fixed in material intellect. He's a very good example. He's a very great thinker. Not that he does not understand all that I'm talking, he would understand quite well. And yet, the consciousness is so tuned to the material intellect, so much overpowering, that he would refuse to accept anything that is not materially visible. I am reading the last page of his book, because you might say that is a sum total of all that he wants to say. And that last page is very useful to illustrate what I am saying now. He says, all this is rejected, all by meaning thereby, all propositions regarding idealism, regarding divinity, regarding spirituality. He says, all this is rejected by the philosophers. Then he adds a long sentence which I am not reading unnecessarily. All this is rejected by the philosophers of my category. That is to say, of Bertrand Russell's category. He says, all this is rejected by the philosophers of my category. They confess frankly that the human intellect is unable to find conclusive answers to many questions of profound importance to mankind. But they refuse to believe that there is some higher way of knowing. It's very clear, there is no pretension about it at all. They refuse to believe that there is some higher way of knowing by which we can discover truths which are hidden from science and the intellect. And by science he means the knowledge that can be gained by physical senses. His definition of science also is limited. Science means that which is known through the physical senses. And intellect means intellect which is ready to accept only the evidences of the physical senses. So he has himself defined what is material intellect. Material intellect rejects, not only rejects, but just they refuse to believe. This word refusal is very important. They refuse to believe that there is some higher way of knowing by which we can discover truths hidden from science and the intellect. Now, after a man who can write such a wonderful book, in many ways his book is a wonderful book, I like it very much. I don't agree with it, but I like it very much. There is a great honesty in this philosophic writing. There is great nobility in this writing. It doesn't pretend. It says very clearly what it wants to say. But here is an example where the philosopher declares, I refuse You may say there are many other ways of knowing. You say, I refuse it. Now, when you refuse, what can you do about it? There is no answer to refusal in this world. In one of the statements, Mother said, the problem of today in the world is refusal with R capital. Simply, there is refusal. And this refusal has many layers. Material intellect is one layer of refusal. Vital intellect is also another layer of refusal. Mental intellect also has got its own refusals. Even the pure intellect also has refusals. They are inbuilt, as it were. It is only when you rise to psychic intellect, spiritual intellect, that this refusal becomes less and less pronounced. Only when you open to supramental intellect, that infinite doors of knowledge are opened, and there is no refusal at all. It admits everything. The totality is accepted. All doors of knowledge are opened up. That is why Sri Aurobindo wants us to move towards a supramental intellect. The vital intellect also refuses. Suppose, for example, I have a desire to see a film today. Simple desire. Now, there are many arguments which can be put forward to me that I should not see a cinema today. All kinds of arguments can come. The vital intellect makes a very good coating over your desire and says, oh, you must see this film because it will educate you. It's good for education. And then when somebody says, but you know, reading this book is also very educative. Why don't you read? Now, this is an evidence put forward. One other evidence that if you want to be educated, of course cinema can educate you, but this also can educate you, so why don't you choose this? You will find the vital intellect will find this very inconvenient. You will argue that book is of a lesser importance because film is a visual means of knowing, very direct way of knowing. So that gives you a greater impression, something which you will never forget, whereas book can be forgotten, but what you see in the film you can never forget. So you support your argument because actually you want to see, basically you want to your desire to see. But vital intellect goes on glossing over it, making beautiful golden coating over it so that it may seem very nice. I want to visit America in any case. I want to move out to America. And only to America. Why? Among all the nations, America is the freest nation. Therefore, I must go to America. It's a good reason. I don't admit that I want to go to America. Simple desire, frank. No, because America is the freest country in the world, therefore, I want to experience the freest country in the world. Therefore, I want to go to America. And then if I put forward any other argument, it becomes very inconvenient. And I go on defending the argument in one way or the other. I refuse to see other arguments. If I say that if you really want to experience freedom, There are many ways of experiencing freedom. It's not only visit to America that gives you the experience of freedom. There are many ways of experiencing freedom. Whereas what is called spiritual freedom is one of the easiest and the best way of experiencing freedom. But if somebody speaks of it, one says, now don't take me to that realm. I refuse to see that. So the vital intellect also refuses when basic desire is denied or is attacked. And so on. Our main important point was just now the material intellect. The greatest obstruction, the greatest objection that comes to the proposition that we should aim at divine life comes from the material intellect. We had seen yesterday, there are three steps of the argument in the life divine. The first step is to expound the human aspiration and to expound the content of that human aspiration, which states that every human being basically aspires for divine life. Whether he admits it or not, whether he doubts it or not, whether he really consciously pursues it or not, but this is the basic, fundamental urge in human beings. It is, Sri Aurobindo begins by saying that this is the urge which has manifested throughout the history of mankind. And it promises also to be the main theme of the future. Much of the book is devoted to this exposition, that human beings aspire for divine life. The second part of this is that this aspiration is justifiable. This aspiration, if you take into account the totality of facts of the world, all the phenomena, from the point of a totality, this aspiration is justified, is rationally justified, and justified also on the basis of the highest experience, both ways. This is the second part of the whole argument. And the third part is that there is a method, there is a way which if you follow, then this aspiration can be fulfilled. As I said, the last part of the life divine combined with the synthesis of yoga answers to this third aspect. There is a way by which our aspiration for divine life can be fulfilled. So that aspiration, when it is fulfilled, you don't need any further proof because it is realized. It's a fact of your life. In the meantime, you need a crutch. A rational crutch, which comes by rational argumentation, which is provided in the life divine, and which also needs evidence of experience. That also is provided in this book. So this is the totality of the whole argument. But at the very outset, as you make this statement, first statement, that there is an aspiration for the divine life, and that divine life is realizable, immediately the first objection comes from the material intellect. The material intellect says, what is realized now is the material world. And this is true, this is real. The divine life is not here visible at all, physically, anywhere. Therefore, it contradicts the actual. The ideal is contradicted by real. And real being real, that which is contradicted with that which contradicts it is invalid, is false. This is a simple argument. Now, Sri Aurobindo states it that to the material intellect, the realized fact is contradicted by the ideal that you put forward. This contradiction proves that the ideal is unreal, invalid. Now, in stating this argument, Sri Aurobindo gives a further qualification, which is very important. Material intellect, which takes our present organization of consciousness as the limit of our possibilities. This is the phrase which is very important. You will read that phrase once again. To the ordinary material intellect, which takes its present organization of consciousness for the limit of its possibilities. Material intellect refuses that there can be any other way of knowing than the way of knowing that is possible for the material consciousness. I read out just now to you the quotation from Russell. It refuses to accept that there is any other way of knowing. That whatever we can know now is the utmost possibility of our capacities. We cannot go beyond this. It refuses to admit that you can develop other faculties, you can go higher, you can go deeper. This possibility itself it rejects. It is this material intellect which is bound to pronounce that the ideal of divine life, it will reject it as invalid. So this is the argument. To the ordinary material intellect, which takes its present organization of consciousness for the limit of its possibilities, the direct contradiction of the unrealized ideals with the realized fact is a final argument against their validity.